Thanks, Susan. So, as Susan mentioned, I'm just going to start us off today with a national overview of psychotropic prescribing across five classes of psychotropic meds, and then move into a look at state-by-state variation, focusing in on the population of youth in the Medicaid program in foster care, and looking at two outcomes, antipsychotic prescribing and polypharmacy. I have no disclosures related to this work. And as I mentioned, we'll start with a study looking at national rates of psychotropic prescribing for the whole Medicaid-enrolled youth population. I'm going to show you data from 2008. And then we'll move into a study focusing in on youth in foster care and looking really at interstate variation over the course of the past decade in prescribing of antipsychotics to youth and also polypharmacy. So for the first study, the source of data here was a national data set of Medicaid analytic extract data, so MAX data from CMS. We were looking at youth age 6 to 18 with continuous Medicaid enrollment, and we defined that as at least 10 of 12 months of eligibility within a given year. Looking at a sample of data that had an annual average of about 10.6 million youth. It was a repeated cross-sectional design, and the prevalence rates that I'm going to show you are the results of multivariate logistic regression modeling. Just quickly, some definitions for our outcome measures. When we're looking at individual psychotropic class use, this is defined as a filled prescription within the year. The way we've defined polypharmacy use is filled prescriptions for three or more psychotropic classes that overlapped for a period of at least 30 days. I just want to draw your attention that it's psychotropic classes, not medications. This is a very conservative measure of polypharmacy. And lastly, the way that we've identified our foster care population is through Medicaid eligibility through federal and state foster care codes. So if a child had foster care eligibility for at least 1 month of the year, that child was labeled as a child in the foster care program for that year. So here we have rates in 2008, prevalence rates of the five most commonly prescribed psychotropic classes to youth. On the left, we have all Medicaid-enrolled youth, followed by the subset of youth in foster care and those with SSI disability. What we can see is that stimulants are the most commonly prescribed class of psychotropics to youth in the Medicaid program. By 2008, 8% of youth in the Medicaid program were using a stimulant, followed by antipsychotics and antidepressants at about 3 to 4% of youth in the Medicaid program, and mood stabilizers and alpha agonists in between 1 and 2%. When we look at youth in foster care and those with SSI disability, we see first off that prescribing rates are much higher. So for these two subgroups of children in the Medicaid program, rates for any given class are 2 to 4 times higher than the general Medicaid population. By 2008, a quarter of youth in both of these populations were receiving a stimulant. The other thing that I think it's important to note here is that by 2008, antipsychotics had surpassed antidepressants as the second most commonly prescribed class of psychotropics to youth in these programs. So transitioning to the next study, this study also looked at MAX data through 2002 through 2008. And the only note to this is at the time that we were preparing our publication, 2007 was the most recently released complete national data set from CMS. So some of what I'm going to show you is just through 2007. But subsequent to that, we've received the 2008 national data. And so I've updated most of what I can in this presentation. This population, again, was just youth with foster care eligibility, age 3 to 18, so a little bit of a wider age group here. And there were, during this time period, an annual average of about 700,000 youth in foster care. Again, a repeated cross-sectional design using multivariate logistic regression. So before getting into the state-specific rates, I just sort of wanted to set the stage with what is the prevalence of both of our outcome measures for youth in foster care. This is 2002 in contrast to 2007. I broke this out by age just to sort of set the context for Dr. Garfield, who will present next on this younger age group, so just to see where they fall in context to other ages of children. What you can see is that there is large growth in prescribing once children enter school age. So that jump from 3 to 5 to 6 to 11 is fairly significant. And then again, growth on both measures into adolescence in prescribing. The other thing to note here is that we do see an increase across all age groups in antipsychotic prescribing to youth in foster care between 2002 and 2007. In contrast, for polypharmacy, really there's no net growth over this period for the way we've defined polypharmacy for youth in foster care. Okay, so here we have state-by-state prevalence of antipsychotic prescribing. On the top is 2002, on the bottom is 2008. Prevalence starts in the lightest gray at 5% and progresses in 5% increments to 30% in the darkest blue. So what we can see first off the bat is that almost every state increased antipsychotic prescribing to youth in the Medicaid program from 2002 to 2008. That map gets a lot bluer. And that the other thing to note here is that we have really strong heterogeneity in prevalence of antipsychotic prescribing by state. So a magnitude of, you know, sixfold prevalence differences. It's kind of hard to miss that Texas is a little bit of an outlier here in very heavy prescribing of antipsychotics. We'll see the same thing as we transition here to polypharmacy. What I'll show you in a few slides is the movement that Texas has made in reducing prescribing to youth in their foster care program. So here, polypharmacy, we have prevalence rates of 5% to 20%. Again, we see that there's pretty wide variation in state rates of polypharmacy prescribing to youth in foster care. But again, what we don't see is the massive increases among most states from 2002 to 2008. In this slide, I just wanted to show sort of over this time period, year to year, what was happening. So what we have here in graph A is antipsychotic prescribing, graph B is polypharmacy prescribing, and each bar is the number of states that experienced either an increase, a decrease, or no change from the year prior in prescribing of this outcome measure. And the threshold we used was a 5% relative change. So in order to be classified as a state with an increase in 2003, you had to have an increase in prescribing of at least 5% relative change over what your rate was in 2002. So what we can see for antipsychotic prescribing is that following very active increase in the darkest orange in the first two years here, we see that most of the transition has been from active increase to no change, so a stabilization at these higher rates. What we can see in contrast for polypharmacy is that following increase in the beginning of the decade, we see much more active decrease followed by a stabilization at these decreased rates. And that 2005 really appears to be a pivotal year when a lot of this transition started to happen. In these last series of graphs, I just sort of wanted to show you state-by-state movement. So what this is showing is along the x-axis, we have 2002 prevalence of antipsychotic prescribing plotted against on the y-axis absolute change in prescribing from 2002 to 2008. Each one of these diamonds represents a state. So you can see for antipsychotic prescribing is what we've seen before is all states but two, Hawaii and Texas, experienced a net increase in antipsychotic prescribing for youth in their foster care program over this period. You can also see that the range of increase was very large, from about 0.5% to nearly 8%. And some of these absolute increases really represented very large relative growth in prescribing. So, for example, Arkansas at about a 7% absolute increase, that represented over 70% relative growth in prescribing over the period. So I just restricted the years here to 2006 to 2008, following that 2005 transition year. And what you can see is that a lot of the states are now converging in the latter part of the decade around the x-axis. So not as much active growth now in these periods. Also note Texas here. Most of Texas's decrease in antipsychotic prescribing happened in the latter part of the decade. So we have the same series of graphs, first 2002 to 2008 for polypharmacy. We have about half the states with a net increase over the period, about half the states with a net decrease over the period, and Texas with an extreme outlier at about 5% absolute reduction in prescribing of polypharmacy over this period. And again, when we restrict the years to 2006 to 2008, we see, again, convergence around stabilization around zero. And Texas, again, most of Texas's decrease was in this latter part of the decade. So in summary, by 2008, 1 in 12 youth in the Medicaid program were receiving a stimulant. And for youth in foster care and disabled youth, antipsychotics surpassed antidepressants as becoming the second most commonly prescribed class of psychotropics. And that we really have two populations of youth within the Medicaid program that are at very high risk of being prescribed psychotropic medications. So youth in foster care and disabled youth receive these medications 2 to 4 times greater than the overall Medicaid population. Among youth in foster care, we saw that psychotropic polypharmacy saw the beginning of a decline during the last decade, while antipsychotic use really remained high. And there's large variation in both the prevalence rates of antipsychotic prescribing and the trends over time and what states are doing with these prescribing practices of antipsychotic use and polypharmacy within the child welfare population. I think to a certain extent, state-level declines in polypharmacy and somewhat in antipsychotic use may be reflective of the implementation of child welfare and Medicaid policies aimed at curbing use. Certainly in Texas we've seen that, and in the latter part of the last decade there was increasing federal attention and state mandates around targeting antipsychotic use in particular and polypharmacy to young children. And lastly, that variation really does underscore the need for best practices in the use of psychotropic medications, because I don't think that anyone would argue that where a child lives should determine their treatment. Just want to acknowledge collaborators. So this work was funded by an AHRQ R01. David Rubin was the principal investigator at Policy Lab and also collaborated with Susan on a lot of this work. I think that, in this area, what we're aiming for is a balance, right? A balance between there are clearly over-prescribing and prescribing where it's not necessary, but then there are many children in which prescribing is absolutely necessary. And so it's finding a balance and making sure that behavioral health systems are equipped with non-therapeutic complementary alternatives to this. I think, I wouldn't worry so much in Texas that the reductions they've seen are indicative of something bad for many children, given that you're starting from a place where almost a third to 40% of their youth were on psychotropic medications. I think the declines that they've seen are heading more towards that balance and less towards restricting medication to youth that need it. I think in other states, Getting to where that sort of fine line is may be a little trickier than in Texas. I think had a long way to go down before they were grappling with that. Yeah, I think that that's an interesting question, and we had started to tackle this. I mean, there's a lot of policy variables that would be nice to have, and there's a lot of movement that's happening within Medicaid programs, within the child welfare systems that, you know, it certainly couldn't fit it all in one study. We had tried to look at whether or not we could merge in some of the NSCAW data on child welfare system changes into a county level data set. I think unfortunately we got into issues where some of the sample sizes for respondents were fairly small, but what we ended up doing is taking it in another direction and looking on the Medicaid side, and Ramesh collaborated on some of this work, and looking at whether or not the Medicaid system structure, so where behavioral health was located within the Medicaid system structure, was predictive of antipsychotic prescribing. And for that, we did an extensive county-level policy review looking at Medicaid system structures to determine whether or not at a county level we had carve-outs, whether behavioral health was separate from physical health. And we did find that those Medicaid system structures and changes in Medicaid system structures over time do correlate with changes in antipsychotic prescribing. But I think that there's a lot of work still to be done in mapping all of the policy changes that have happened over the last decade to the prescribing changes that we're seeing. Yeah, so in our fee-for-service programs, we had the most prescribing, followed by carve-outs and then integrated plans where both physical health and behavioral health were carved out under the same entity. Yeah. Well, absolutely. And what we did do is we looked at sort of the overall Medicaid population, then we broke out these relationships for youth in foster care and youth in the SSI program. And what we did find was that the most significant effects of behavioral health structure on prescribing were for youth in the foster care population. Yeah. Yeah, and I can speak anecdotally, I guess it's not anecdotally, work that we're doing in Pennsylvania. We've started to work with the Department of Public Welfare and have received Pennsylvania-specific Medicaid data through 2012. And a lot of Pennsylvania's work began in 2010, where they developed a work group, a behavioral health work group within the Medicaid and Child Welfare programs. And what we have seen is that in 2012, we have marked reductions in psychotropic prescribing within the state. But really, it took about 2 years following when the policy movement started happening before we really saw those reductions.